Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parent in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or, hopefully, how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because, let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Parent in Hell with...
Lily, can you see... Robert Beckett.
Robert Beckett.
Robert Beckett. Robert. And can you see Josh Widdicombe?
Josh Widdicombe.
Well done.
Well done.
Very strong.
Rob Beckett.
I love it. It's so Scottish to go, it's Robert, it's not Rob.
It's Robert
Beckett. Even a four-year-old Scott
goes, Robbie Beckett, eh?
Robbie Beckett. Lily Kelly, age four.
Lily Kelly, four. They've got such scary voices, even at
they
four.
Have.
The Glaswegians are so intimidating. That child would terrify me if she said, give me your money.
Yeah, we rubby back it, eh? Give me your fucking money.
Really enjoy the podcast also. Fair enjoy. Really enjoy the podcast. Oh, this is Scottish again. I didn't know what this meant. Really enjoy the podcast. Also, fair enjoyed your books.
Fair enjoyed? Is that a Scottish thing?
I think it must be. I hope it isn't Scottish for didn't.
You wee bastard!
Yeah.
Fair enjoyed. Because we got told off for Harris, not is a play, is a name, not short for Harrison. Sorry, I just never met a Harris before. Harris was arse where I grew up. I fair enjoyed that. It is a Scottish thing.
It is a Scottish thing. That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Good. Congratulations, Rob. You are a Sunday Times bestseller as well.
Oh, stop it. Both of us.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Do you know what? It's a learned podcast.
A couple of stiff neck authors. Hi, you're listening to a podcast hosted by authors. I listen to a podcast. It's just two authors shooting the breeze about kids and shit. They're quite funny for authors.
They do stuff like they go, oh, what's that Scottish word? I'll Google it.
I'm a mother. Bestseller, bitch. Stuff like that.
But Josh, it's Princess Peach, not Princess Toadstool. I must have referenced Princess Toadstool. I do apologise. I spent my childhood saving her from Bowser, and now my kids have a Switch. I'm saving her again. Although it makes me look like a pro. When she's playing Mario 3D, all starts, gets stuck on a level, I can help because I've already played the games and remember what to do.
The Switch is so good for kids. The games on it are brilliant. I really would heartily recommend that. I love playing the Switch. I play it all the time. But yeah, it is Princess Peach, not Princess Toadstool.
Just in case you were worried this email isn't Scottish enough, she ends by
saying... Oh, no, Princess Peach Toadstool. That is correct. First name Peach, second name Toadstool.
But
she had a tough upbringing. The thing is, tough schooling, that was in Eton, wherever she was. I don't know where the girl one is. What's the girl one of Eton? Fuck knows. Who cares?
Ask Ivo. Just so you know, to end the podcast, to end the most Scottish email we've ever received, just so you know, Billy Connolly has a book out and has kids, so can you get him on the podcast?
All right, fair enough.
Fair enough, yep. Billy Connolly and Kevin Bridges are on together next week with Susan Cowman, so that'll be a good episode.
But yeah, I'd love to get Billy Connolly on. What a legend.
Love to get Billy Connolly on. Also, if you are a top performer who wants to promote their book, just get up the duff.
Yeah,
we're here for
performer, sexually and comedically. If you can perform sexually to the point of climax and conception, get on the show.
Yeah.
Is that a good call out?
Yeah, that is a good call out. And I look forward
I don't think you have to perform well sexually. It just needs the mechanics need to work.
Exactly.
You could ejaculate immediately and still father a child.
No child is the result of the best sex people have ever had, are they?
No, imagine if it was. The pressure would be so intense.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Basically, the weaker the orgasm, the less functional the child.
Was that good enough? We'll find out in 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, if you absolutely just like proper Kama Sutra in it for an hour and a half, they come out and just smash their 11 plus at 7. Just a super brain kid from massive long fucks.
Rob. Anyway, more Dubai stuff, Rob.
Oh, a couple of more bits. I mentioned something. Told you
we're listening
friends,
to Tuesday. Rob's been to Dubai on holiday with his children.
Yes. We went for dinner for a tapas place. Took 90 minutes for the food, the starter, to arrive. Okay. The kids'
best
stuff
arrived.
Best
holiday ever, he said. Everything so far has been a tale of woe.
I know. We were just so desperate to get away. Anyway, it was 90 minutes. So in the end, we went, look, we were quite full by that point. You know, sometimes you go out for dinner, and once you have the starter, the reality is you don't really need three courses. You're just gluttony, isn't it?
Tapas as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it took so long, but they weren't really tapas. It was just more Spanish.
Tapas out in bits and bobs.
That's what I thought, but it weren't coming. Anyway, so the kids had their food, plain pasta, near enough all week.
Yeah, fucking hell, mate. Yeah,
15
quid
ago. Fucking plain pasta. Anyway, so the other one's just discovered salt on chips, so now she's going to cardiac arrest next week, the amount of salt she's chugging down. You can see her...
My daughter's diet
blocking.
Is basically, is it beige? Then I'll eat
it. Exactly. So they had their plate of plain pasta, and then, anyway, the food didn't come, and I said to the person, look, don't worry about the mains. It's been an hour and a half. The kids are tired. We're meeting people. I had a 10:30 lobby meet. Yeah. We're going to go, And she went, oh, we're really sorry. She went, look, don't pay. It's been a nightmare. So that was nice about
it. Of course I am. You haven't given me a fucking food.
Exactly.
Cheers for the favour.
I'm a bit too tumbleweedy, I think. I was like, oh, God, that's nice of them. I've never even eaten it. I've really gone off complaining. I should complain more. Anyway, but then as we went to leave, and then went, okay, let's get up, everyone. And then the three-year-old that didn't eat anything all fucking week went, I'm still eating my pasta. I was like, you what? And then they come and put down a massive bowl of paella, and then we'd already said we didn't want it, and I was like, oh, have it if you want, you still don't have to pay. And I was like, oh, no, I don't want it, because I don't want to start eating it. And then they chucked me a massive bill for dinner. So now I got, and then I went, shall I still eat my pasta? So I went, do you want secret daddy pasta? Right, which sounds so
that's
bad.
One of the creepiest things that's ever happened.
Yeah, so what I did was I just grabbed two handfuls of the plain pasta and held it in my hand, and then we all left, and then as we walked back to the hotel, I just gave her a little bit of pasta like a dog treat. She loved it and ate so much pasta. She ate more out of my hand in the street than she had at every dinner table.
I just wish you'd met someone, like a fan, who wanted their photo with you. And there's a photo somewhere of you with your arm around someone with a hand full of pasta.
Secret daddy pasta.
So I would shake your hand. Why weren't you COVID? No, because my hands are full of secret daddy pasta.
Look at my kid's crying because she's hungry. Yeah. Give me a break. Someone did want a photo, though, on the beach, right? And the absolute lunatic took it. It tried to do full length. I was in my trunks. I was like, fucking hell, leave it out, will you? Get closer. Shoulders up. Come on, who wants full length photo on the beach? Jesus Christ. But yeah, so that was a secret daddy pasta. Was a bit intense, but it just took so long. They don't eat anything on holiday.
Once again, Rob, best holiday ever.
Best holiday ever.
I was feeding my child pasta from my hands walking on the street.
I put factor 50 on my face every day, still bright red. That's good to know if you ever go to Dubai.
But that's because any English person in Dubai is bright red. That's just the way it works.
Exactly. We had another meltdown on the way back. All my fault on the flight back. They were exhausted. We had to get up really early. Our flight was at 9 o'clock, so we woke up at 5, which was actually 3 a.m. English time.
Yeah. When Roman Kemp's getting up.
Yeah, exactly. We passed a few. Emma Bunton was still asleep, but a few Theakston was out on the road.
If you haven't listened to Tuesday's episode, if you've just come for Harry Hill, there's, I'd say, about 80% of the stuff we've discussed so far, you've needed to listen to Tuesday's episode. I do apologise.
Secret Daddy Pasta's new.
Yeah, Secret Daddy Pasta's new. But anyone who's gone, oh, I've heard this is good. I'll start with the Harry Hill episode. I like him. Well, there's this weird bit for 15 minutes before where they were talking complete bullshit.
So there was exhausted.
They were talking about Emma Bunton getting up early.
She doesn't. Love Emma Bunton. Won't have a bad word said against her.
No, she's great.
Mum Pauline's a big fan. Sent her a book, I did. Anyway, let's not get bogged down by that. Other things on the plane. On the way back, I said, for some reason, because I was like, they've been so good, and we normally you take them, get a little toy or stuff on holiday, like a little present from the toy shop. We never really left the hotel pool. So I went, oh, we'll get you a little toy from like Duty Free. Eventually, that was in there, and the five-year-old picked something, and then the three-year-old just had a meltdown. Basically, she was overwhelmed by choice, and she was so tired, and she wanted these teddies and all that, and she just lost her mind, and I had to carry her kicking and screaming through the terminal. Because she wanted two teddies, but I could only give her one because she wanted the chocolates on one of them. And that teddy wasn't soft enough. And then in the end, do you know what teddy she got? She got a camel with the Irish bar written on it, which is a famous place in Dubai where all English people go and get pissed. So she essentially got like a stag do teddy bear.
Oh, that is amazing.
But everyone was looking at me and she absolutely lost her mind and was crying for gold.
Oh, God, Rob.
It was horrible. Actually, I think this was terrible, this holiday.
Yeah, it does sound like the worst holiday in history.
Oh, I forgot to... I turned the aircon off in the middle of the night. At night in Dubai, it gets to 30 degrees all night. I woke up in the middle of the night. My children had kicked the covers off and stripped naked because they were so hot because I had no windows open, just the aircon had gone off and it had gone to like 26 degrees in the room. So they'd stripped naked to cool down. I woke up, you know, like in a film when someone gets shipwrecked and they land on the beach and they go, trying to get some air after nearly drowning. I woke up like that and then turned the aircon off. But I basically cooked my entire family for the first 6 hours of the holiday. But it was the best holiday I've ever had.
That's the best thing. If you are listening to this as just a Harry Hill debutante, if you want 30 minutes more of Hell in Dubai under the best holidays ever had, do go back and enjoy the Tuesday episode.
What I would say about Dubai is you are one decision away from the best holiday of your life and then one decision away from the worst holiday of your life, and there's not much in between those two things happening. But, you know, make your own mind up. That's what I felt like.
If you want to hear what Roman Kemp said to Sam Allardyce, as we say, Tuesday's show. Now, do you know what, Rob? I've got some things to say, but I think I'll save them for Tuesday's show because I'm so excited about Harry Hill. He is my favourite comic. He's a brilliant man. I'm excited to have him on, particularly because he doesn't really do many podcasts. So it's quite...
No, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Here's Harry Hill.
Hello, Harry Hill. How are you?
I'm very well, yes. Nice to talk to you, fellas.
We're very excited, Harry. I'm very excited, but I think Josh is a level above me. He sort of has not stopped talking about this booking for weeks.
This is a great booking. This is the kind of booking we're looking for.
Well, who else have you had on it? I'll fess up now, fellas. I haven't actually listened to your podcast.
Michelle Obama, Elton John, and now you.
Michelle Obama's very good, isn't she?
Yeah, she's great.
She was
really insightful about stuff.
Yeah.
All the stuff
she
knows.
Full of really funny stories. most of which one cannot use because of the sensitive nature of the material.
She wasn't even on promo. She did it because she loved the podcast. I was really impressed. What is your setup at home? How many kids have you got?
I've got three kids. Yeah, three girls. Yeah, I was denied a son. I wasn't and heir, unfortunately.
And heir.
But so one is 23, one is 24. So we had those very close together.
Yep.
And I said, no more children. That's it.
Okay. Right?
I remember Dominic Holland used to have this. You know Dom. Dominic, yeah. You should get him.
Spider-Man's dad.
Spider-Man's dad, Spider-Man senior.
Spider granddad.
Yeah, Spider granddad. I'm just repeating what you're saying. Oh, so I said no more children because we had two so close together and it was that double pram thing.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Oh, Jesus. You know, the double pram is just too wide to go through.
Yeah.
And the thing actually that really got to me was actually pushing this double pram with these two babies in, and we had two dogs as well. And I would push this, walking the dogs and pushing this pram around the park. And the thing that got to me most was old lady saying, "You look like you've got your hands full." Oh, thanks a lot. Oh, you spotted that, did you? You look like you've got your hands full. Oh, come on, guys.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
What dogs did you have? Because that does make a difference, doesn't it? The size of the dog.
Well, fox terriers.
Fox terriers.
Small but willful.
Yeah. Small but willful. Like me and Josh. That was going to be the original name of this podcast. I'm going to Google a fox terrier so I can get my head around it. You got a little
fox
terrier.
It's the Tintin. It's the Tintin dog. You know.
So you had, you didn't want any kit. You didn't want any more.
I said that's it. You know, and we were quite rigid about that.
Oh, they look like a sort of Jack Russell with a big jumper on.
Yeah. And a moustache.
Yeah, and a moustache. A Jack Russell in witness protection.
Yeah.
Those dogs have seen some things.
And we were quite rigid. My wife was quite rigid about it. It's your turn, it's your, my turn. It's your, you know, it was like that alternate thing at night. Your turn to get up, my turn to get up.
Yeah.
And I was like, that around that, this is what, 97 we had the first one. 98 was the second one. That was when I was making that Channel 4 show. So it was a lot of, I had to do turnover, a lot of stand-up. So I would have to do a tour. This is my previous handlers would make me do it. We're back on tour. So it would be tour, and then it would be write and record the show. And I wrote it on my own. So I was really under the cosh. And so I would get back from tour, you know, 2 a.m, and you know the thing, you know, creep into bed, and then baby wakes up.
Your turn.
Yep. Your turn. So I was just completely knackered. And so I said no. But I could tell that my wife was going to hold it against me for the rest of the night. So 7 years later.
Seven?
Yeah, seven years
seven.
Later.
Seven, yeah.
In a moment of weakness. We've conceived as a third child, another girl. And it was the best thing we ever did.
Oh,
because we, you know what it's like. You have the first one, you don't know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah.
You don't realize that everything is a phase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and you get the baby back from the hospital and you have that sort of, I don't know, it's about a week or something where it just sleeps and doesn't do anything. You're thinking, what's all the fuss about? Why is everyone saying it's going to ruin your life? And then they wake up and they start screaming and you think that's going to go on forever. And then that goes. And then, you know, something else happens, you know. They start teething or they start falling over. Or...
Well, because like, you say it's the best thing you ever did, Kevin the Third, but then how long until you thought that? Because obviously at the beginning,
it was a lot
easier because the kids were so much older as well. They're like grown-ups at 7 and 8, aren't they, really?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, it was fine because, you know, we knew what we were doing with the baby and we were able to enjoy it. And maybe I wasn't so busy, I don't know, but it was... It was a really good time. And actually, you know, I think she said the best, talking of parenting, she said the best out of us. I think the first two got a bit of a rough deal. Sorry, guys. Sorry, guys.
Unlucky, but things happen.
So does your third daughter still live with you?
Yeah. She's at school now.
How old is she?
17.
So what's it like having teenage daughters and young women? As daughters, is it scary
to us?
You lose the control a bit, don't you? So they're out and about doing whatever.
I think the thing with girls is that they're easier when they're little, and then when they become teenagers, then it starts to get difficult. And you know, I used to do this. I had this sort of weird thing where I would scream at them. Or they would come down and they would be in like they used to roll up the top of their school. Skirt, so in this sort of jailbait kind of look with thick makeup on, right? And I would just, you know, turn into my dad. Get that stuff off you! I'd say, you're not going out like that. Come here, you know. And it was silly, you know, really silly. So I bought this book. I sent off for this book called something like Talking to Your Teens So Your Teens Can Talk to You. Mm. Which is a book about, you know, obviously understanding. Anyway, I get this book through from him and I get it. And I'm sitting on the stairs reading this book and daughter number two comes home from school. She goes, what's that book, Dad? I said, it's called Talking to Your Teens So Your Teens Can Talk to You. I said, it's just, you know, so we can hopefully not have so many arguments. She goes, loser. So I never bothered reading it. My own theory about parenting is it doesn't matter what you do. They are basically who they are pretty much from the start, yeah. You know, unless you sort of do something terrible.
Are you, I mean, no disrespect here, I can't see you as a figure of authority.
I am. Yeah, no.
Are you?
Sorry. Sorry. Yeah.
Stop that now. How dare you? Get into your room. Yeah.
Are you the good cop or the bad cop?
Well, I think we're both bad cops, to be honest. We're both quite strict. You know, we are quite strict, I think. Yeah. I mean, you know, with the third, we've been a lot more, you know, it's a cliche, isn't it? But we've been a lot more relaxed with her because, you know, I think the first one gets the roughest deal and they were so close together. They both did about kind of boundaries and rules and all that. Yeah. I mean, I keep saying to her, it's a bit mean. I keep saying to her, she keeps saying like, what are we doing today, Dad? Right? She's 17. You know, the weekends, what we're doing, what we're going to do today, you know, can we go to see, an art gallery or something? And I'm saying, look, I'm not your friend. I'm your dad. I'm not your friend. You need to get some friends to do this stuff with, you know, because like when I was a kid growing up in the 70s, you kind of parented yourself. You just wanted to get out and the idea of hanging around with I think this is the great difference between our generations is that, you know, your parents weren't your friends. You kind of loved them, but they were those kind of annoying people or, you know, it's a very different, you couldn't, my kids say to me now when I talk to my mum that, why are you like that when you talk to your mum? Because I'm sort of like, I'm like a, I don't know, like a little boy. Or, you know, I talk to her I can't talk to her in a straightforward way like they talk to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You're still that teenage guy.
Well, you revert to some sort of, I don't know what it is. It's not quite that, is it? But it's
But some parents would be desperate for their teenagers to want to do stuff with them on a weekend.
Yeah. And I do half the time. Yeah.
It's not all the time.
I do a lot with her, you know, I'm on the pedalo with her on the Serpentine. 57 years old. She's a great kid, actually. She's a good girl.
Did you, what did they make of your career? Because you're such a kind of different person. You have people like, I don't know who we've interviewed, who's, say, Jack D, and you're like, Jack D at home isn't dissimilar to Jack D at work, I imagine.
Yeah.
But were they a fan of the Harry, were they a fan of TV Burp or You've Been Framed or The Harry Hill Show or stuff like that?
When I gave up TV Burp, I said to them, I'm giving up that show. And they said, yay! Right? And I said, I thought you liked it because we'd all watch it together. And they said, no, we like the show, Dan, but you're always so grumpy when you're making it. And that was the thing. Yeah, that was the thing. Because that's what they see the other side of it, which is sort of, you know, grinding. The worry and the work of it.
Yeah.
You know, so, and also they never like me being recognized.
Really?
Didn't they?
Yeah. And in fact, only recently they were sort of talking about that to me, saying, they're very wary about people. I mean, Jesus, I'm not Paul McCartney. But but they're saying, people, you know, treat us differently, or they want to get, you know, they want to know about you and all this.
Yeah, must be weird.
And I would never, they would prefer if I didn't go sometimes to the school to pick them up or all that stuff, because it was a kind of, you know, you just want to fit in, don't you, when you're
of course.
Yeah. A kid. So, I think they like the shows. I mean, my Winnie is a kind of the second daughter. She says she prefers the live stuff. She says she thinks I'm funniest when I'm doing that, but I don't know. But none of them are doing it. None of them are interested in doing it. They never came to any recordings. Always kept them away from it because I always thought that with showbiz, you've got to really want to succeed in it. You've got to really, really want to love it and want it to work, haven't you? If you've just got a little bit of talent, you're the daughter of, you know, X, Y, or Z, you can probably get a little bit down the line, can't you? But inevitably, you're going to be disappointed, and it's a really mean business. You know, it can be a really mean business, and you've got to be so motivated that you just let that wash over you. So I thought, I'm not going to show them the glamorous side, you know, turning up and the people, you know, giving, they used to give me a chocolate eclair about 4:30.
Wow. Oh, it is great, isn't it, Telly?
It's so good. Different in the 90s, though. We don't get that these days.
No, you don't get that on Channel 4, do you, Josh? Yeah, if you want it, you have to go and eat it in, like, Leeds or somewhere like that. You can't have it in London.
But what you didn't realise, Harry, is you were billed for those chocolate eclairs throughout the 90s and the 2000s.
Yeah, yeah, my eclair bill. But and actually, the third one, Freddie, you know, the 17-year-old, she is much more interested in it.
Is she?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's sort of, she's desperate. I mean, I don't really get invited to any of that stuff anymore, you know, but she's desperate for me to get invited to this, that or the other, you know, some sort of...
Do you think you're more relaxed about it now? So your guard's down a bit more to, like, let her talk about it or be interested in it, where before you was very much like, no, we don't do that. We just, I come home and work finishes.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think you're right. A bit over the top, perhaps. Because actually, I think it was a shame they didn't come to some of those recordings, because they were, you know, it might have been quite good fun for them. I don't know.
Yeah, but you only think you're doing the best at the time, aren't you?
Yeah,
if you, if you went back of experience and nostalgia, it's always a slightly different decision, isn't it?
Absolutely.
But with the being recognised at school gates and things, have you ever been tempted to sort of, because you've got such a striking look of the big collars and the suit and the glasses and stuff, it would, I imagine, be fairly easy for you to, if you didn't have your glasses on and not a different outfit, can you go a bit incognito?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, some people wear it really well, don't they? Like David Walliams. We went to a restaurant, and David Walliams is in the restaurant, right? And he comes over. You know, he's such a tall bloke anyway. And he just looks exactly like, I don't know if he was wearing makeup, but he looked like David Walliams, you know, on TV. Just exactly the same. And he's tall, and he's walking through the restaurant. Everyone's looking at him, and he's just sort of taking it like... almost like he owns the restaurant, you know, walking through, and he comes over to us. Oh, you know, would you come and say hello to my son and all this? And we go and say hello to him. And I'm walking with him, thinking, oh, everyone's staring at me because I'm with David Walliams. But, I mean, let's face it. I'm talking about the time when I was doing TV Burt, when it was like a, you know, I was...
The biggest show on telly, basically, really, on a Saturday night, one of...
Yeah. You're very kind.
I'd say so. I'd say it's cultural big show. You know, obviously you had the X Factors and stuff, but every family would sit down and watch that on that evening.
Yeah, I remember this in the you know, in this book I've got out is that I talk about me getting a bit paranoid about it, right? Because there were some photographs in one of the, you know, Hello or something, of me walking the dogs, the same fox terriers, in the park. Anyway, I was in the park and I saw a photographer, right? And as I saw him, he appeared to me to duck behind a tree, right? I thought, oh, right, okay. So I walk over to him, thinking it's a paparazzi. And he walks off, and I follow him like I'm really right, you know.
So was you annoyed that he was taking photos? You wanna, yeah.
Yeah, I was annoyed. And he starts to walk a bit faster, I walk a bit faster. And then I come around a corner, and he's crouched taking photographs of like crocuses, or, you know, in the park. And I say to him, in a very testy way, I say, you get any nice photos today then? He goes, oh, yeah. I said, yeah, you know, okay, well, you know, what have you taken photographs of then? Right, and he gets his cameras, one of those digital cameras, and he's showing me the back of it, and it's a photograph of a swan and a crocus and a lake, right? No photographs of me at all, because he wasn't a paparazzi. I said, you've got a real talent for that, haven't you? He said, oh, thanks very much. That was it.
Oh, God. That's so awkward.
I was the creep. And another
time. He's got another story. Never guess. Harry will come up to me aggressively with these two little weird Jack Russells. I had to show him a photo of a swan, and then he left.
Yeah, I felt like a real idiot. But worse than that, right? I come home one day, and my car, I used to have an old 1954 A30. Doesn't mean anything to you. And there appeared to be, the windscreen was shattered, and there appeared to be a bullet hole. Yeah, in the driver's side, right? Right over where my head would have been. I run into the house and I say, darling, you know, someone's tried to assassinate me.
You right? didn't really think that, did
I
you?
Did, but I tell you why. It was only a couple of weeks after Jill Dando
oh, God.
Was murdered.
Yeah.
I know it's, you know, ridiculous. Like there was a, like someone had a list. So she goes, she said, well, if you really think that, you ought to phone the police. Right. So I phoned the police. I mean, I'm really embarrassed. I phoned up the police. So I said, hello. I said, someone's tried to, there's a bullet hole in my car. I said, someone's tried to shoot. I think someone's tried to shoot me. No, that was in the car. And he goes, okay, sir. Did you hear a gunshot? And I thought, I didn't actually. I thought that's probably, you know, that you would have, someone would have heard a gunshot. I said, no. I said, then I, and he wasn't really interested. And I said, and this is really poor of me because it's not really my, you know, my name isn't Harry. And I said, oh, it's Harry Hill, I said. And he pauses for a moment. He goes, soonest I could get you would be about midnight, right?
Yeah.
So he's thinking he could make, this could be a nice career move for him if he solves that, right? Yeah. The triangle, the mysterious assassination triangle. Anyway, sure enough, doorbell rings about midnight. I'm staying up. A great big copper in the doorway. He goes, I take it that's your car out there with the, you know, 1954, whatever it is. I said, yes. He said, well, first things first, that is not a bullet hole. That has been caused by someone kicking a stone or something, kids kicking stones in the street. All right. Okay. He said, and notice that you haven't got a current tax disc. He said, so you need to do that or get a car off the road. And that was it. Like a real telling off.
Hi, I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars, because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll, please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In your book, it's like a proper sort of honest autobiography of you, not sort of a sort of fictional Harry Hill autobiography.
No, it's a real thing. It's really me, Matthew Keith Hall.
Has it been nice going back over your career?
Not really, no.
So it's not been cathartic, just brought up stuff that embarrassed you and made you feel bad.
I enjoyed, you know, the bits I enjoyed, and I don't know if you're the same.
I love the way you look through it, and it's not your book. It's just the monk one. Just look through a couple of chapter head.
Harry, look, there's a character called Harry. Harry sneered at him. I don't believe that you don't know what happened to Swifty. You know you're just not telling me, Harry. Whatever happened to Swifty isn't the issue, said Bacon.
So basically, Harry hasn't got, for the listeners, Harry hasn't got a copy of his book yet. He's just got the sleeve that he's put round another book for promo.
Yeah, it's supposed to be out next week.
You better write
Last thing they said, oh, there's problems with distribution due to Brexit.
10,000 copies of your book in France at the port.
Yeah, you'd be able to do an arena in Calais by the end of next year if I'm
Bonjour.
Reading it.
What I enjoyed was, and I don't know if you're the same, is the early days of the stand-up. That was the thing I enjoyed revisiting, because that's the most exciting bit for me.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, because, you know, I gave up medicine, so it was all this whole, you know, dilemma, and obviously, you know, it went...
How old was you when you gave up the medicine?
And being a doctor? I think I was 1990, so I was 26. 26, yeah.
And so would that have been late 80s when you were first on the stand-up circuit?
1990.
1990.
I basically got the... I don't know how you... How did you get gigs? I would get Time Out and phone up the numbers in the back of Time Out. Is that what you...
Yeah, email, so that, a lot of emails to the kind of... Like, people just pass emails around. That's what I found.
Yeah, and or Facebook and the combination of phone numbers.
The first open spot I did, I was doing a locum as a doctor down in Southampton Hospital.
Yeah.
And I left... I drove up the M3 to get to the Comedy Store. It was me and there were two other open spots. And Mickey Hutton, you know Mickey Hutton?
Oh, yeah, rings a bell, Mickey Hutton, yeah.
Pompey, yeah. He comes in and he looks at us.
Such a geezer name, isn't it, Mickey Hutton?
he looks at us, he points at us and he goes, you'll be shit, you'll die, and you'll be crap. Or, you know, he's just going off to the other room. The other comics.
Joe, I don't think he's that great at predictions, though, to be honest. I don't want to take him to Grand National. one of the most successful comedians of his generation. You'll be shit. I don't think he will, actually, Mickey. I think he will.
he did say, I mean, I didn't get booked because Kim Kinney wasn't there to see it, so it was all, it was sort of a waste of time. But he did say to me afterwards, he said, oh, you know, no, it's all right. You know, you've got some good jokes. You'll be fine sort of thing. Which, you'd really grasp onto those little bits, don't you?
When you started out as a stand-up and you were Harry Hill, which is, it's an alternative kind of thing.
Well, I was a deadpan. But when I started, because my heroes were deadpan comics. So, you know, Jack D, Stuart Lee. I mean, I remember sitting in the Chuckle Club. It was a pub in Carnaby Street, the Shakespeare's Head. It was upstairs there, tiny function room. And I was on, I was in the front row watching, right? I bought a ticket with my mate and Jack D was on and Lee Evans, right? Fantastic bill. And I remember when Jack was on, everyone was just like laughing and laughing, you know, just like, really kind of throwing the heads back. And I remember looking around at everyone and thinking, because I, you know, at that time I thought I would like to do it. I remember looking at people laughing and I thought, no matter how funny I am, I will never, ever be as funny as this. Do you know what I mean? I will never get this reaction.
And you were good at predictions, you know, so some people, can do predictions.
I wanted to be...
And I'm joking.
I wanted to be a deadpan, so I would come on and my opening line used to be, because I was Harry Hall when I first started, I would say, my name's Harry Hall and here are the jokes. Like that.
That's a great opener.
And actually Stuart said to me, oh, you know, you should try doing your act sitting down. You know, you should do it at a table or something and be like a newsreader, right? Because I was such a fan of his. So I did. It was one night at the Banana Club. Ladies and gentlemen, Harry Hall, right? And I walk on carrying a table and a chair. Give me like 3 minutes to set up. Hello, I'm Harry Hall and here are the jokes. Don't ever do that again. Thanks for that tip.
Wait, it worked on TV Burp though, didn't it? Behind a desk.
Yeah.
When did you change to Hill?
Well, then in those days, this whole thing was about equity. You had to get an equity and get your equity card.
Okay.
I mean... So you had to have a name that wasn't already in equity. And there was a woman called Harriet Hall, H-A-R-I, Harry Hall. And so I said, I had to write to her and ask her permission to use the name. She said no. So then I was in a quandary. And so I was going to be Harry Horn. I was going to be Harry Carnegie at one time. Hello, it's Harry Carnegie. I just settled on Hill. Yeah, I mean, not what I wanted.
Done all right. Daniel, all right.
First time I ever saw you on TV, I don't know if I've talked to you about this before, you were hosting Top of the Pops.
Oh, yeah, you did,
When did you host Top of the Pops?
And so there was this period in the 90s where it was all like loads of comedians were hosting Top of the Pops. And every time they came back to you, you had more cotton wool in your ears.
At the end. That's great.
You had like so much cotton wool.
It was like a running gag. Well, there's a guy that took, the bloke that took over as executive producer of Top of the Pops, Rick Blacksill. He was a big fan of comedy. And so he booked a load of comics to host it, to try and, I don't know. Yeah, because I say, because the opening thing is I go, welcome to Top of the Pops. And it was really weird doing it because I was screaming over the top of these kids. They were all just making so much noise. I couldn't hear myself think. And I was going, welcome to Top of the Pops. Always engaging Skunk and Nancy. It was that, you know, because in Time Out, they would call you, you'd have a little word to describe your act when you were unknown. And one of the ones that I got saddled with was always engaging. Like, that's going to sell tickets.
Yeah, I'm a cheeky chappy, likeable, smiley. Yeah. That was mine sort of thing.
Experienced was the worst one.
Experienced. Oh, back again.
Experienced comic Ivor Dembina. That was the one they used to do.
I'm playing football with him later, Ivor Dembina.
Oh, I'll give him my best. He gave me the best advice, actually, I ever got. He said, if you're going badly, get off. And if it's going well, get off.
That is great advice.
Yeah.
And do you write about your wife and kids in the book, or is it more just the career stuff and the shows?
Well, I tried to write an autobiography that was in no way personal.
I can actually, some people have achieved that. I can send it over to you. I've read them.
So I tried to make it about just like the funny things that have happened to me, you know, and a lot of it is about things that went wrong.
Mm.
You know, like, for instance, there's a whole really funny chapter, I think it's funny anyway, about, you know, the I Can't Sing musical, the X Factor musical.
Oh, yeah.
You know, working with Simon Cowell and all that. And, you know, I don't know.
How was that?
I went to that and it was great.
Yeah, it was a good show and it was absolutely the best fun. It was really great fun. And actually, we got on fine, me and Simon. But
do you still stay in touch?
I wasn't allowed to have his email address.
Oh.
No, I would get an email via his, because 2 weeks before it opened, you saw it, Josh. So it was quite, it was a big, basically a big piss take of the X Factor.
Yeah.
You know, and my favorite bit in the middle of it was where they go, they decide that they're going to write the song. It's Louis and Cheryl and Simon. They decide they're going to write the single for the winner. And they go, but we're the judges of the X Factor. We don't know anything about music. Anyway, I get his email from him via his representative saying, like, there was lots of like good stuff about the show and about the lighting and all this, because he's actually a very good producer, Simon. He said, I'm a little bit worried that my character is made to look ridiculous. And the idea that I am the father of the hunchback is too far-fetched. In answer to your question, your first question, they made me insert a chapter about my wife.
They? Who consists of they?
The publishers. Because I had her chipping in along the way, sort of in a kind of scathing way, which she is very good at, you know. Like, for instance, when I left for the... When we were nominated for, Bert was nominated for a BAFTA. As I'm leaving for the BAFTAs, very excited, you know, in my dinner suit, she says, awards are for people with big egos and low self-esteem.
She's not wrong.
She's on the nail, on the head, right? Timing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she's very good at keeping my feet on the ground, so to speak.
Do you talk about your children in the book?
I talk about having the kids, and I talk about, you know, the sort of that early kind of parenting stuff.
Am I right in saying, I might be wrong on this, but my wife just said that one of your daughters is an artist, so she has followed... Two of them are. So they have followed what your wife does.
Yeah, yeah. They are, and the other one's on an art scholarship, so they are very arty. I mean, part of it, I think, is they're not very academic. And so that was, you know, they have dyslexia. The two older ones have dyslexia, and, you know, quite badly. And one is a ceramicist and the other one's a fine artist. Yeah. And which I've always really encouraged, because I kind of felt like that was something I might have liked to have done.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in another life. And, you know, this friend I formed a double act with, he was at art school. And obviously my wife was that's how I met my wife, through that connection. And art school just seemed to be a lot more fun than medical school, frankly.
Well, yeah, I imagine.
You once told me a story about you were trying to get your daughter to identify Switzerland on a map.
Oh, yeah.
And
this is we made a lot of mistakes. with the first two kids about schooling. You know, okay. I put my hands up to that. We were skittish and we didn't know what we were doing. And, you know, I was state school educated. So I went, yeah. I lived in Kent. And I went in the 70s, I went to a comprehensive, and then you got sort of creamed off to be on the, to go to the grammar school, right?
Yeah.
If you were. And that was all free. And obviously it was a completely different time. But so I was quite keen for them to go to state school. But my wife was dead against it. Oh, they'll be recognized as your kids and it'll be, you know, they'll be bullied and all this. I don't know. So we went through various things, one of which was going to, this isn't the same story, but we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Was going to church. We thought, oh, we'll get in with the, religious.
Yeah.
You know, the Church of England thing, right?
Say what you want about religious people. They're good at maths.
So I go, we start going, you know, a bit in the vicar, and I think I should make a donation. This is the way to secure a place, is to make a donation. So I say to the vicar, because we had our kids christened there, I said, so I'd like to make a donation. Is there anything that the church needs? He said, we do need a cooker for the parish rooms. He says, we do need a guy. I said, oh, great, yeah. Was that 300, 400 quid or something? I thought, yeah, all right. I said, yeah, great. And anyway, he sends us a bill for this cooker. It's a range cooker, £3,000. I'm thinking, what are you cooking in this parish room? You know, I was thinking like a few sausage rolls. Yeah. Warming up a few sausage rolls.
Yeah, it's only one fish, one loaf, isn't it?
Yeah. So then they went to this sort of ultra posh kind of private school with this sort of bizarre uniform and almost like fancy dress. And then one day the second oldest said,
coming from Ariel.
She was about,
imagine it, that outfit.
Yeah, that collar's a bit smaller, like an idiot. Tiny collar on that outfit, stupid uniform.
She said her homework was to identify the countries of Europe.
Yeah.
There are tests here. I said, what's that? France. What's that one? Germany. And I point to Switzerland. I said, what's that one? She said, oh, I don't know. I said, I'll give you a clue. It's famous for its cuckoo clocks and chocolate. And she said, Harrods? At which point I realised that we were perhaps spoiling her. Harrods. My father-in-law said to me, the best way to choose a school is to go to the Harrods uniform department and choose the nicest uniform. Find out where that school is and send them there. So yeah, we made a lot of we tried all different kinds of schools. We like ultra liberal ones.
So they went to lots of different schools then.
Those first two, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mistake. Big mistake. And
rather than just picking on one and making a decision, do you think?
Yeah, we should have stuck with it. We should have stuck with one.
Because you weren't moving around then, you was in the same place, but just
we weren't
moving
around. No. You weren't in the army.
How many schools did they go to?
Five or six. There was there was one really liberal one they went to. And the only reason they got into that one is because two children had been expelled for having sex in the long jump pit.
Oh, that's a messy place.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was a big mistake. Anyway, we got it right with the third one.
We didn't want to bring up your mistakes. We're really excited about reading the book, and I'm sure there's really happy
that's
stories
in
them as
book.
Well.
That's not in the book.
That's not in the book. I see an exclusive. Stop looking in it. It's not your
book. Sorry, it's not my book. It's not my book.
The book is out November the 11th.
Next, yes, Armistice Day, buy it with your poppy.
Yep.
Don't forget to buy a copy of Fabio's autobiography called
Fight. You've
got
a minute of silence to read it if you want.
If you're going to remember something on that day.
I'm doing a little tour of...
You are? Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny book little tour. Places.
So where are you touring? Is this a book tour or a stand-up show?
It's a book tour.
So what happens in your book tours? Because I did one in Bromley and no one knew what was going on.
Well, I know. It's a difficult thing because they come with expectations. I mean, I'll try and be funny for a bit and then I'll get into the book. I've got... what I've done is I've gone through some of my old videos, home videos And I'm so.
It's a good way to sell a book, isn't it? Shams of videos.
So, like, because in the 90s, I used to carry a camcorder around with me a lot to gigs and stuff. And
250 quid's a lot of money if someone falls over, isn't it?
And so I've got lots of videos of you know, the old days, basically.
Oh, brilliant. That'd be a great documentary.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it would or not, but I think it's, I don't know if it's of interest to people, but there's a really great bit, I think, anyway, backstage. It was like a benefit at the Comedy Store, and just the whole of the 90s scene is
there. Oh, wow. I'm definitely interested in this.
Oh, I'm up.
So, you know, Mark Thomas and Joe Brand, Lee Hurst, Alan Davis, Eddie Izzard, they're all just crammed into that little room. Yeah, so lots of stuff like that. And
you talk about the video. I've just remembered, I was like, why do I know about that? It's because when you wrote that, you wrote a really lovely article about Sean Locke when he passed away.
Yeah, I've got some nice bits of Sean, yeah.
Do you know what? I'm gonna try and come to that because that sounds amazing.
Where are they? Where can we watch this show?
Do you
know
what? I'm going to read out the dates like I'm Steve Wright on Radio 2.
All right, go on.
You know, like when you go on Steve Wright and read out every place.
You need to look hotter. It's the hottest interview I've ever had. The guy looks so hot every time he talks.
Do you know what? Give him his due. I've never said anything he hasn't laughed at. He absolutely. he's a great audience.
What a guy.
He's brilliant. He's the only one that's basically survived, isn't he?
Yeah.
Still in that
good
job.
Due. And this is the reason, because your fight book tours calling at London, Brighton, Tring, Cambridge, Nottingham, Maidenhead, Bristol, Birmingham, Milton Keynes, Cardiff, Glasgow, back to London for the British Library, and ending in Manchester on the 29th of November.
I've got, there's a good video I've got of, we did the, when I did the pub band gigs with Al Murray, you know, me and Al used to do a show.
Yeah.
And we did the Hazlitt in Maidstone, and Vic Reeves came along and he was hanging out backstage and he got really drunk. He drank our rider, basically. And he got hold of my video camera and filmed himself and then invited us back to his place because he lives in Kent. And then he sets up his guitar, electric guitar. And my mate sets up his keyboard and there's like this sort of terrible jam session, drunken jam session in his house. So yeah, stuff like that. Oh, wow. Me playing snooker with Joe Brand in Amsterdam. I don't know if it's really of any interest. There's some really sweet bits of Bill and Sean in Glastonbury.
Oh, lovely. Oh, that'll be great. So all those things cut together. I definitely think that'll make a great show. Once you've done the book tour, we should edit that together.
Harry, it's been an absolute pleasure.
No, it's been great talking to you.
It's been one of my favourites. I'm throwing it out there, Josh. Josh likes to throw that out willy-nilly, but I only save it for some of the best ones. But it's been absolutely amazing, Harry. It's been great.
You don't want to hear it from me because basically that's like getting a laugh off Steve Wright. You know, it's worth nothing. It's worth nothing to hear it from me.
You're dealing with Ken Bruce here, and I mean it. Right. Oh, there's one question we always ask, Harry. One question before you go. We've loved this. Is there one thing parenting-wise that your wife's done with the kids that used to or still does or used to do that used to really annoy you or wind you up, but you don't really bring it up because it causes an argument? Just the way that she, you know, if it's something that she...
But she'd take their side sometimes.
Okay.
The worst. I mean, and I would do it with them against her, which is the worst sort of parenting, is to take the side. What she'd say is... they'd say, you're a bit grumpy today, Dad. And I said, no, I'm not. Yeah, Mum says you are. She's noticed it. I am yet to work out how you react to that. Because it just makes you more grumpy, even if you weren't grumpy.
Harry, that's amazing. Thank you. See you later, mate.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, man. Thank
you. Nice to see you, fellas. Good luck.
Harry Hill, what a legend. Oh, I'm so excited. That was good.
Comedy,
I was worried he was just going to do the full Harry Hill act, but he's got a good middle ground, isn't he?
He's such a nice bloke. And I also found it really interesting to, you'd never hear him talk about his family. As he said, he was forced to put it into his book. And It is really what I love about this show, doing it, is you get to talk to people about things they would never talk to normally.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think we did go a bit comedy there, but I can't help it. I'm so obsessed with comedy that sometimes you've just got to go, I've got an hour with Harry Hill here. And I'll be honest, I don't give a fuck when his daughter learned to swim. I want to find out about, you know, Joe Brand in Amsterdam. I know I'm a good parent, but I'm a comedian before a parent when it comes to information. That was amazing. He's so amazing. Funny. And it's, I hope it comes across as well in the podcast, but his face is so, he's so, when he's saying all these things, it's like a second laugh just by looking at his face. Maybe we'll I'll ask him and see if he minds putting a little clip of it online or something from the Zoom. It's so funny. It's
just, he's got a gleeful little chipmunky face when he's laughing. Do you know
what I mean? He's so happy. He's just so physical. But he is quite deadpan, but moves around a lot. And it's interesting what he's saying about the kids as well. What was it? Who cares? It's Harry Hill talking about comedy. Right.
Fight is published, Fight being his book, is published on November the 11th. And there is a national tour to coincide, going from everywhere, from London to Tring to Manchester.
That was Harry Hill, absolute legend. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed recording it. And we'll be back on Tuesday.
See you then.
Bye.